Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. I'm Jeff Gamet. Today is Thursday, February 11th, 2016. With me today, I have Brian Chaffin. How's it going, Brian?
Goes, man. Goes.
Yeah, that's better than it stops.
It's true. Infinitely even.
Yes, indeed. And Dave Hamilton, how are you?
I am swell today. Thanks for having me.
I'm glad you're here. I'm glad both of you are here. So thanks for being on. I was thinking the first thing we could talk about today is an interesting switch up in suppliers for Apple. And the deal is that word is out now that Taiwan Semiconductor Manufacturing Company, TSMC, is how most people refer to it, is getting an exclusive deal to make the A10 processors for the next iPhone. And since it's exclusive, that means Samsung is out of the mix. And that's going to be a big deal for Samsung because currently they're making close to 70% of the mobile processors for Apple. And they're about to lose out on a significant chunk of that. And I'm curious what you guys
think. Like a significant chunk, as in 70%?
100% of the 70%?
Yeah, 100%
of the 70%. Yeah, so they're about to miss out on a significant chunk of iPhone chip manufacturing.
Yeah, I would imagine that Samsung would continue to make the A9 as long as Apple is using it, and the A8X if it's still being used.
That seems reasonable to me. But losing the new chip, that's going to be a big blow.
And,
yeah. And word is that they're scrambling right now to try and find other companies that they can get deals with to at least soften that blow some.
So to that end, this is terrible news for Austin and Manor, Texas.
I hadn't even thought about that.
That's where these where Samsung makes Apple's chips, or at least a lot of them. I think it's all of them, but it's at least a lot of them.
Yeah, that's bad. That could have a pretty nasty impact on Austin's economy.
In Maynard's economy in particular. It's been a lot of housing built out there over the years to support what Samsung is doing. And, of course, you know, Samsung, like Apple, got a sweetheart deal that has just raised heck with for taxes, that is. It's raised heck with, the local school systems and stuff, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. These are the kinds of things that have ripple effects in the communities that are affected. And in this particular case, Samsung is a Korean company, a South Korean company, but it's been making Apple's chips in the States.
Now, Samsung could end up with deals for future processors. They are supposedly working on perfecting a 7-nanometer process for Apple's chips. And if they get that together and offer Apple the right deal, then they could be making maybe like the A11 processors.
Sure, or the 10X.
Or the 10X, sure.
It's an interesting thing because Samsung has been able to keep this business in part because its processes were better. I don't know how much lingering animosity there is between Apple's executives and Samsung, but it's interesting that TSMC, which has never been able to get all of Apple's chip business before, has done something, good enough or important enough here to do so.
I have an idea.
Okay.
Do we remember back to October when people were raving about how the Samsung chips got worse battery life in their iPhones 6S than the TSMC chips did?
Oh, I forgot about that.
Yeah, I didn't forget about that. And my guess is...
Apple?
Neither did Apple, neither right? Did Apple. Even though they came out and said, you're measuring it wrong, essentially. I think that, in fact, I think that was your title to the article about it, Brian.
Yeah.
But, it's hard not to remember that when we're having this conversation, right? We don't know what Apple's reasons are, but we do know that the Apple was the only one that said you're measuring it wrong. Everyone else was able to prove that at some level, the TSMC chips were better. No one proved that Samsung's chips were better. The only difference was the delta between them, right? Some people were saying it's hours of battery life. Some people were saying it's minutes and you should stop worrying about it, you know. And but in any of the tests, TSMC came out better. The margin was the only disputed factor. So this is interesting.
So to your point here, Dave, I think it's easy to sort of think that you know, Apple has just long wanted to shove Samsung out all of its doors.
Yep.
Right. Because as retribution,
sure, it's an easy thing to easy conclusion to jump to. Right.
But despite the fact that I think certainly a lot of that is those of us who are fans of Apple, have been projecting that, right? We want Apple to stick it to Samsung.
Yeah, but right? Not because Samsung makes bad chips, but because Samsung makes phones that copied Apple's.
Correct.
Right.
And Apple has clearly shown that it's just going to do what it needs to do to make the best products.
Yeah, they're making Apple is in fact making a measured, unemotional decision. When in fact they're the ones that, if anyone had the right or a good excuse to make an emotional decision here, it would be Apple. But instead, they're actually just saying, "What? That's not important." Yes, that happens over here. This happens over there, and we're just going to do the right thing for our customers.
Right, and and for them, and for the bottom line too. Yeah.
Sometimes compartmentalizing is good.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's compartmentalized to a degree. But you know, if this battery thing was a real thing, which certainly seemed like it was.
Well, we have here a 10 nanometer process. That's a big deal. So, you know, the smaller the process, and I realize you guys know this, but I'm just saying it for anyone who doesn't.
Please do.
The smaller the process, the more efficient the chip, all other things being equal.
Except that it was TSMC's 16 nanometer process that was more battery efficient than Samsung's 14 nanometer process. You're right. In a general sense,
what it has been until now.
Correct. Yeah.
But dropping from 16 down to 10 is a big deal. And if Samsung can't do that or can't match it, let alone, of course, this historical thing where the company, you know, those chips, despite being made with the 14 nanometer process, were in fact less efficient. This is probably a big part of what's going on.
Yeah, I mean, it's not dissimilar, though it's much earlier in the game, but it's not dissimilar to the whole thing when Apple moved from Motorola, you know, PowerPC chips to Intel chips, right, in the Macs. It was, but there, if in fact it's that same sort of thought process, they're doing it much earlier in the game, right? They went years kind of waiting for PowerPC chips to come back around. And in fact, it was, you know, painfully obvious by the time they moved to Intel that was just not going to happen, and Intel chips were going to trounce PowerPCs for computers. So, but, you know, Apple learned something in that process. And, you know, Apple, one of the things that people don't talk a lot about, but Apple certainly has done, is they do their darndest to learn from the past, right? And I mean, almost in an artificial intelligence kind of way, right? I mean, their whole bug reporting system is built to learn from itself and be predictive and that sort of thing, right? It's very, very interesting how they call it radar for a reason, right? And it's because it's named after Radar O'Reilly from MASH, because he had you know, almost superhuman powers, and he was very prescient about things that were going to happen in the future, and that's what radar is built for. I can't imagine radar is the only thing at Apple that was designed that way, right? Corporate processes and things like that are probably tracked in a similar way, and it, maybe not the same way, but certainly Apple pays attention to what they've learned in the past and making sure not to repeat those mistakes. So perhaps they're looking at this and saying the writing's on the wall, jump, go. There's no reason not to, right? They're already using chips from TSMC. We know that this, based on what we've seen, this is the better path. Choose it. Be done.
Sure. And they get the bonus of 10 nanometer process.
Exactly.
And as long as TSMC can meet the volume that Apple needs, then Apple wins.
That's the trick.
I was just going to bring that up because that's been TSMC's weakness in the past, is being able to meet the volumes that Apple needed. So what's changed there?
Right. Yeah, well, Samsung, they actually built factories just to accommodate Apple's demand.
Right. Well, and TSMC will do that too. I mean, that's sort of how that world works, right?
Sure.
You get the contract and build a factory. And, well, the way the world works is Apple says they're going to give you a contract and you build the factory first. At least this was the old days, right? And then Apple screws you out of that contract, and now you have a factory built, or tries to change the deal at the last minute. But that's Apple of old. Yeah, that I haven't heard too much of that happening these days, but that's certainly how it was, 10, 15 years ago, but not today. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that because Samsung is so big, there's this perception that TSMC is small, and they are not. That's a very big company. Just compared to Samsung, they appear small.
Right.
Yeah. Samsung is particularly ginormous. Its ginormity is immense.
they have huge ginormity.
Yes.
Excessive ginormity, Brian. Ginormitis? I don't know. Never mind.
Or depending on your perspective, ginorlicious.
Well, that's enjoying the ginormity, isn't it there, Jeff?
Yes, that would be enjoying the ginormity.
Okay. Yes. But not commenting on its ginormousness.
You know, I don't think I've ever conjugated ginormity before.
Maybe you have another topic.
Maybe I do. Hey, Dave.
Hey, Jeff.
So you found a really cool table that can help people like me that use Comcast to figure out what sort of broadband speeds I should really be expecting.
Yeah, so Comcast uses names. Like, when you look on your Comcast bill, you see things like, performance, or performance 50, or performance pro, or blast, or blast 75, or blast 105. And you pay for these things, and that is your internet access, right? But what you don't see on the bill, and what's very hard to find, is what those speeds actually are. But you can find those things from Comcast. It's not easy. But you can find them. What you can't find from Comcast is what actually happens to your cable modem, right? So when you get a Comcast internet package, and actually this would be true of any cable provider or really even a DSL provider, they provision your account. And in the case of a cable modem, they actually provision your device. They send a little file down to it that says you will go at these speeds, right? Or you will go no faster than these speeds. And then hopefully they have the bandwidth upstream from you to actually provide you those speeds. But that what the cable modem gets and what the cable modem is told is something Comcast does not publish, at least not in a way that's easy to find. But DSL Reports, the folks who have always been there to help sort this stuff out, has a great little table posted. And so, for example, blast coverage, the advertised speeds are 50 megabits per second down and 10 megabits per second up, but they actually provision your cable modem at 62.5 down and 12.5 up. And the same is true kind of all the way through. My service here is Blast 150 or Blast Pro. I can't remember what Comcast actually calls it, but it's advertised as 150 down and 10 up. My modem is provisioned for 187.5 down and 12.5 up. So it's a handy little chart to help you sort out what you should be getting, and then you can use speed tests. And for these types of things, it's actually better to use Comcast's speed test, because that'll tell you what you're getting to essentially the end of Comcast. So it gets you past your neighborhood and all of that stuff, which is important. So speedtest.xfinity.com is what that is at now. It used to be speedtest.comcast.net. Recently, that site started redirecting to the Xfinity one.
.infinity.com?
Yes, speedtest.infinity.com. But here's the thing. There's going one level deeper, you need to make sure that your connection from whatever device you're doing the speed test from to your cable modem is capable of handling the speeds you think you're going to get. So for using my example, I need to make sure that I have a connection all the way from my device to my cable modem that could theoretically go 187.5 megabits per second. So if you're using Wi-Fi, you probably need to be on 802.11ac to really get those speeds. Mm-hmm. Yes, I know 802.11n, depending on how many streams you have running, you get 150 megabits per second per stream with 802.11n. So if you have a, 3x3 router, that means that you have three streams of 802.11n. But you need a 3x3 client, and MacBook Pros have that. MacBook Airs, I think they're all 2x2. So yes, you'd get 300 megabits per second, but really you get approximately half of what the advertised speed would be in that. So you might get 150 from that. You can look, actually, the easiest way is to go when you have wireless turned on, go ahead and hit the option key first and then click on the little airport icon in your menu bar. And mm-hmm. that will tell you the transmit rate. That's the rate that your computer is able to transmit to your router or your wireless access point, which in most cases is going to be your router. It'll also tell you what protocol it's using, 802.11n or 802.11ac. Whatever you see there, divide it by two, and that's what you can transmit to your router. You don't get to see what the downstream from the router is in this. You could get it from the router if the router shows it to you. But those two can be different. It is asynchronous. So you might have, 300 to your router, but only, 150 coming the other direction. It's possible. These things are constantly changing, especially with AC, based on conditions and all of that stuff. But you need to make sure you've got enough speed. An Ethernet connection direct to your router is really the best way to check and make sure that your cable connection is working, because it just sort of rules out all the other problems. Mm-hmm. And I say that an Ethernet connection is the best thing, as long as your Ethernet connection is fast enough. Ethernet typically runs at one of two speeds, 100 megabits per second or 1,000. We call the latter gigabit Ethernet. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and there are devices out there that can do 10 megabits per second, much, much slower. But for the most part, you're dealing with 100 or 1,000. So for anything with Comcast that's above their Blast 75 tier, you would need to make sure you're running gigabit Ethernet. And most Macs, in fact, I would say that all Macs support gigabit Ethernet. Most routers support gigabit Ethernet, but not all do. Here's an interesting thing. The Apple TV, including the fourth generation Apple TV, mm-hmm. does not support gigabit Ethernet. It is a 100 meg. Really? Really?
Wow.
Why? Well, there's a whole Reddit thread about this, because the only way I found out about it was I've been doing a bunch of stuff at the house because I'm crazy about my bandwidth and all that good stuff. But And I was doing speed tests from my Apple TV, which I had Etherneted in to another connection, and I'll leave the rest of it off because it's a big tangent. But anyway, I had a connection that I knew would do, a couple hundred megabits a second. And I wanted to make sure my Apple TV could do it. And of course, the Apple TV 4 has a speed. You have the ability to download the Ookla speed test app because it has apps on it. Mm-hmm. And I ran it. And it stopped at 99 megabits per second on the downstream. I'm like, that's weird. It didn't hit me initially. And so I unplugged the Ethernet cable and connected wirelessly over 802.11ac. And I got, you know, whatever, 160 megabits down. I'm like, okay, that's weird. And then I woke up this morning, actually, and it hit me. I'm like, wait a minute. That feels like
port.
Yeah. And so first I thought, well, it's the cable, right? So I tried a different cable, same thing. But I looked, my router will tell me whether connection, sometimes you get it with the color of the lights and sometimes you get it just inside the software, your router. And for me, it was the latter, but it doesn't matter. My router was telling me, yeah, this thing's connected at 100. And it was like, aha, okay, good. I know what the problem is. Now why? I tried different cables. I tried different ports on the router because sometimes a port can go bad or, you know, whatever. And it didn't matter. Wherever I plugged it in, even a port that I had connected to with gigabit prior, it was 100. And then I looked and I found this Reddit thread where everybody was saying, no, 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 it's still 100 megabit connection. And so there was a lot of talk about why that would be. And most everybody was focused on internet connection speeds, saying, well, most people don't have faster than 100 megabits per second, so it doesn't matter. It's like, well, A, that might be true. Most people don't, but many people still do have faster than 100 megabit connections. Mm-hmm. And forget about the internet. We have apps on this thing. So if you've got Plex running on your local network or even your iTunes library, right? Running on your local network. Well, that presumably could transmit faster than 100 megabits if right. you've got an Ethernet network, seems right?
A curious way to try to save a quarter.
Yeah, I'm curious how much Apple is saving there but the thing is, you know, so there's the argument that says, well, it doesn't matter, you know, even streaming 4K video is not going to take up anywhere close to 100 megabits per second. But it's more than that, right? You're causing, you know, essentially what's called buffer bloat on your network because you've got this device that can't receive as fast as the other device can send. And so now your Apple TV is going to suffer from all this latency for the entire time that data is being sent to it. Because when you start playing a movie or something from your local network, it buffers up in the Apple TV, so it gets more of it than you are. It comes in faster than you're watching it, right? Mm-hmm. And then it goes and gets more. It depending on the size of the movie, it may store the whole thing at once, or it may just, you know, kind of get future chunks and discard stuff from the past. But yeah, it's weird. Like you said, Brian, it's a curious decision. And so for my Apple TV, it's actually faster for me to connect wirelessly to my 802.11ac router than it is over Ethernet. And maybe that's the reason. Maybe they looked and said, yeah, most people are doing this wirelessly anyway. It does save us, you know, whatever, a dollar more. I don't know how much it saves them, you know, but it can't be a huge amount, but you know, in mass.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of good tangents.
One last tangent, speedtest.xfinity.com, uses Flash.
Oh, seriously?
Yeah, it's the right way to do a speed test, to be brutally honest. There is speedof.me, which does some very, it does it without Flash, but it's inaccurate. You need an app running on your computer to do the speed test and actually to manage that speed test. So Flash is currently the best way to do that inside a browser. Right. So it makes a lot of sense. Now, if you download for your iPhone the Ookla speed test app, which is the same backend engine, although you can't connect it to Comcast, you have to connect it to their servers. That's not Flash. That's just running as an app. But in order to put it in browsers, yeah, it's Flash. Makes sense. And this is something that we'll lose when Flash goes away, is things like this, where you need a cross-platform app to put it in the browser.
Java, baby.
Well, but that's going away too, right? We just talked about
that. Oh, right.
Yeah.
You know, this is the downside of this is, you know, we rant about these technologies, but there is a time and a place for them. And this is a great example of that. You know, unless Ookla wants to make, you know, a Mac app and a Windows app and support the updates of all of those, and it doesn't run on this platform or that platform. You know, it's kind of a mess. It's just easier. Just write in Flash. Good to go.
I'm suddenly kind of sad inside.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep.
And we're out of time. So I guess on that really uplifting note, we're going to have to wrap up. Dave, thank you for being here.
My pleasure.
Yeah. And Brian, thank you for being here as well.
Dave's pleasure.
It was. Thanks for having me, Jeff.
It was great to have you. And it was great to have Brian here to support you. And listeners, it's awesome to have you here every single day. Thank you so much for listening. We'll see everyone again tomorrow.